Taking Stock with Pim Fox.
Sign on, the lines are drawn and clear. There's no straddling fences here. We're going public with this.
All right, companies going public, raising money on stock markets. Let's find out more, find out some trends. We have Scott Rostin of Trading the Street. Scott Rostin, great to have you with us in the studio. Explain for people that are not familiar with Trading the Street, what is Trading the Street and how did you get involved in this business?
Thank you for having me. Trading the Street, we are a professional services company training finance professionals in accounting, financial modeling, and corporate valuation. So we're on the front lines, if you will, of training the next generations of Wall Street professionals on a lot of the technical nuts and bolts of how to perform on the job and do a lot of the analyses that are going into leverage buyouts, taking companies public, M&A transactions. I got into it. My background is I was a banker at Merrill Lynch in the Mergers and Acquisitions Group. I got involved with their training program. I then taught high school for a couple years, and then I kind of merged the two, if you will, of starting Trading the Street in 1999. And so now proud to say we're 25 full-time people around the world with offices mostly here in New York, but also in San Francisco, Chicago, London, New Delhi. So we're global in operations. And we have, you know, well over 140 clients, and last year 25,000 people went through our programs.
But I thought that MBA students, people who went to business school, they're supposed to learn all this. Or what are they not learning that you're teaching them?
That's a very popular question that we receive. I'm actually an adjunct professor at Kenan Flagler Business School at UNC. Two of my other instructors, one's an adjunct at Kellogg and another's an adjunct here at Fordham. So the difference what we do is we're trying to bring a real-world spin on bridging them from academia into getting them desk ready to perform on the job. We actually do a lot of workshops at business schools from the top schools around, you know, but we're trying to prepare them for what they're going to need to know on the desk. So we take the theory and the skills they learn in class and put them into practice.
Yeah, I mean, I remember getting my MBA back in the 80s. It was really focused on sort of business and that side of it, as opposed to finance, markets, the sort of things you have to deal with when you go to a Wall Street firm or any of its competitors, I suppose.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. And it's a lot more sophisticated now. The whole boom in the industry, the 80s itself kind of took the MBA to a whole nother level as a feeder into Wall Street for the hiring. And the 1990s refined that, especially with the technology boom and the dot-com era. And now we've seen over the last decade, they're a lot more sophisticated. So our job is to keep being cutting edge for them, of giving them hands-on, real-time, practical skills they can use when they're going to be on the job.
Scott, go ahead, Dave.
No, that's all right. I'm just thinking almost 2 years into a stock market rally now, I think your business would be getting a whole lot better.
business is going well. Yes, we were up 2010, a little over 40% by pretty much all metrics, revenue, days taught, number of participants. Q1 year to date, we're up 40% over Q1 2010. A lot of that, as you noted, is due to the market volume. As the equity markets go up, people are more confident. But the banks are, you know, okay, I like to say to our clients, a new normal on the post-financial crisis. They're not going away. You know, we're still figuring out what the regulatory environment is, but they're hiring again. Now, albeit not at the 2006, 2007 levels, but their hiring levels are way up from 2009 and early 2010.
All right, we're going to continue the conversation with Scott Rostin of Trading the Street. We're going to talk about initial public offerings, companies coming to the stock market looking to raise money. So far, 39 have announced plans to do so this year. 29 of them have priced. We're going to find out what's the trend and find out the industry groups that are the most popular for initial public offerings. That's next on Taking Stock.
Yeah, we have a teacher with us here on Taking Stock on Bloomberg. I'm Dave Wilson along with Pim Fox, and that teacher is Scott Rostin, who is the founder and principal of Trading the Street. And Scott, it's part of that. You mentioned that you're training people about how to deal with initial public offerings, IPOs. Well, now that we've got almost the two-year bull market in stocks, there is a real IPO market to teach them about, isn't there?
Yes, there is, which is refreshing. It's a lot of pent-up demand. A lot of this is cyclical. And so as the economy, you know, continues to expand and people get more confident, companies are going to want to go out there and raise capital.
And so as they do, are you seeing, I mean, looking at this year, I mean, Pim already mentioned 29 initial public offerings have priced. What are you seeing in terms of where what's coming to market now that you might not have seen, say, last year or the year before that?
One big trend I think you're going to see and can continue is the private equity-backed IPOs. You've had a couple successful ones over the last month or so with Nelson Media coming to public, and most recently last week with Kinder Morgan. And both of those have been relatively successful. Freescale Semiconductor, another private equity-backed, a large one, has recently filed. I would expect, as you see those continue to trend well, the private equity firms are sophisticated. They know there's a window of opportunity. They're going to probably then try to run to file to get the Toys R Us, HCAs, et cetera, et cetera. And I think the interesting thing to remember to put in private equity perspective, these are a lot of the high-profile headline transactions from the boom years of 2006, 2007. The only way these companies are going to get an exit from these investments is through the public markets. How are you going to sell an industry leader like a Kinder Morgan to, the public markets is a logical way to exit these private equity investments.
But you mentioned this idea that the window is open, and I'm thinking, all right, so it's an exit strategy, and I don't know, but these people are very smart. I mean, these private equity guys, I mean, they know the ins and outs of these companies, and they raise the money to take them private in the first place. Now they see a chance to sell. Why would I want to be on the other side of that trade? If these guys are so intimately involved with these businesses and they're selling, wouldn't I want to be a seller too?
That's a great point. And one of my professors years ago, you know, asked the question of why would you ever want to buy a company going public? First thing you want to do in doing your fundamental analysis is what are the uses of proceeds? Where are they going?
Right. Are they going to the company or are they just going to make somebody whole because their investors have been knocking on the door for 3 years saying, give me my money back.
Yeah, give me a return. Yeah, I got to realize return. That's exactly right. Two interesting points to that. First of all, Kinder Morgan last week, all the proceeds went to the sellers, to the financial sponsors selling it. No proceeds to the company. Stock priced above the range. Stock, last time I checked, was still slightly above the range where it was trading. So it's been well received by that. I think that shows a renewed demand by the investor and confidence by the investment community to get to these quality of assets, especially a pipeline company like Kinder Morgan. When Freescale filed last week, their use of proceeds was all for debt repayment. Another thing you have to remember with the macro, you can talk all you want about macro trends, but there's always going to be an individual story around the company, be it their accounting, be it their valuation, be it the management team, or in these cases, the uses of proceeds. So again, even though there's a theme of private equity-backed public offerings for as a possible exit, every company's going to have their own story, which you need to investigate. You need to make sure that you're comfortable putting your money to work with that.
Well, since you mentioned Kinder Morgan, I should point out, company came public at $30 a share. It's trading around $30.75, so up about 2.5% from the IPO price. The thing about what makes this IPO market a little different, you know, we talk about the private equity firms, but there's also the government, right? I mean, you've got Ally Financial as a possible IPO later in the second quarter. You've got Chrysler, and that doesn't even count the government's 92% stake in American International Group, AIG. How do the private equity firms compete with that when it comes to getting investors for their IPOs?
That's a very good point. I think what they're probably going to look at, especially Chrysler, look at the success of GM and how is GM performing. Investors tend to do what we teach in class all the time is a comparables analysis of looking at the peers and looking at the peer group, comparing them on relative valuation metrics from price to earnings multiples to enterprise value to EBITDA, you know, as a cash flow metric and the like. And so if you go through individual ones, so take AIG, you're going to comp them against their peer group of insurance companies. Ally Financials, you're going to comp them against their financial services peers. And so, yes, that could be a flood of money, but the government was very smart about how they did GM. They were aggressive, but they also realized they needed this to trade up over a long time to get the return back for the American taxpayers.
But they did wipe out the original GM shareholders, and they also managed to wipe out most of the bondholders.
That is absolutely true. And so restructuring is ugly. I'm not a restructuring expert, but when you talk to any restructuring banker, lawyer, investor, it is rough and tumble and has it's very ugly. Shareholders are unfortunately the first to lose, but they're also the first to gain from the upside.
All right, we're going to continue the conversation with Scott Rostin of Training the Street. We've got more on initial public offerings next on Taking Stock.
As we return to our discussion of initial public offerings here on Taking Stock, I'm Dave Wilson, along with Pim Fox, and with us, we have Scott Rostin from Training the Street. So, Scott, thinking about this year's companies to go public, you know, last year you had the $20 billion IPO from General Motors, and that was really sort of a harbinger of what was to come in the market. Now, looking ahead, what deals should we pay attention to that may rival GM in terms of size?
Rival GM in terms of size. That would probably be a challenge. That is a very, very large, big one. Again, you know, going back to Kinder Morgan for a second, that was the largest private equity-backed transaction. It was a significant deal of generating approximately $3 billion raised. And a lot of those private equity firms are going to have the size and the wherewithal of these companies to float that much of shares. You know, the list you mentioned earlier, you know, Chrysler would be a pretty significant one. AIG would be a very large transaction. The nice thing about the IPO market, because companies have to file, you have lead time, and investors can get their arms around that, and they can see what's coming through the deal pipeline, and therefore they can start to line up their ducks and get their monies in order.
Scott, I was just looking at the industry groups that have announced or have already had initial public offerings. Healthcare is the big one. It got 8 so far this year, and that seems to outpace all other industry groups by a pretty decent margin. If you look at who's number 2, it's a tie between, it's financial services, but they're also 8. But if we look at financial services, that also includes some hotel companies as well as some asset managers. And, of course, the big private equity-backed Bank United deal. Healthcare, is that where most of the action is going to be this year?
A lot of growth in healthcare. It's growing, expanding, and also given the uncertainty of the world and the regulation of what's going to happen with so-called Obamacare and how's that's going to all shake out, you're going to see a lot of opportunity. With the revolution, if you will, is going to come opportunities, and I would expect to see healthcare to continue to get a lot of capital investment.
And then, of course, you've got HCA in the pipeline, private equity-backed firm. I mean, is that really sort of the big kahuna when it comes to healthcare IPO candidates at this point?
That absolutely could. And another interesting point about HCA is that the companies, first of all, they tested waters last year and they pulled, which is not necessarily a good thing. But again, a lot of it has to do with market timing, the window we discussed earlier. When the windows are open, you want to make sure you get involved. But HCA also did what another exit strategy for property firms called a leverage recapitalization, or a so-called dividend recap, successfully last year. So they were able to take money off the table. Again, that's a sign of confidence that their cash flow profile is improving, their debt levels are manageable, and that debt investors are willing to take on the additional paper, which is usually a healthy sign, all else being equal, about the underlying fundamentals of the company.
Hey, Scott, have you ever invested in an initial public offering?
Good question. Full disclosure. My personal story with an IPOs was a .com called UBID back in 2000 or so. I'm a, full disclosure, Merrill Lynch client. So I was able to get access to this through my financial consultant. And the deal he gave me was, you may not sell this, because you cannot be labeled a flipper.
Right.
So you must hold it for 6 months. Okay. That was the time. I got in, I think it was allocated, 100 to 200 shares. It wasn't anything substantial.
Right. You're still working for a living.
I'm still working for a living. It shot up through the roof of the .com craze. And 6 months to the day, I took half the investment off the table. I wanted to take all of it off the table. He said, no, let's only take half and let the other half ride, because I was able to get, a 4x return on investment in 6 months, which, again, it's...
But that's what everybody, the reason I ask is because that's what everybody's always looking for, right? They're always looking for the edge. They always want to get in on something that nobody else can get in on so that they watch the stock go up. And then this is really about, making money. And so the reason I bring it up is because we're always sort of using the initial public offering market as some proxy for the health of entrepreneurism and capital raising in the United States. And, yesterday I was listening to someone talk about all the IPOs in China and how that was such a bad sign for the U.S. And I thought, that doesn't make any sense, because you really got to find out where the proceeds go and whether people are really going to hold these things for a long term.
I agree with you. I'm much more of a fundamental investment, more of a value investor, Buffett, Graham, Dodd school of thought personally. But there are a lot of smart, the smart money, traditional private equity firms, the fast money, which people label in the hedge funds. I mean, they're very sophisticated and they're able to profit off of these. I think a much better strategy for the average retail individual investor is a buy and hold, buy at a fair price, good companies over the long term. It's going to be very difficult without access to make money in the IPO market.
I want to thank you very much. Scott Rostin, Training the Street. Spend some time with us in the future. Watch the IPO market with it. We look forward to having you.
Thank you very much.
You can subscribe to Bloomberg's premium podcast service at Bloomberg.com/Tom Keene and listen to Taking Stock weekday afternoons at 3 Eastern on Bloomberg 1130 in New York or on satellite radio, Sirius Channel 130 and XM Channel 129. Copyright 2011, Bloomberg LP.